Greetings, friends and gentle listeners, and welcome to episode 56 of the Spicer Speaking Podcast, coming to you from, now fairly sultry Palm Desert, California, here in the golf and outdoor nexus of the Coachella Valley, Palm Springs area. I'm your host, Judd Spicer, five-time award-winning writer, associate member of the Golf Writers Association of America, former ESPN radio co-host, 10.7 handicap. Yeah, gone down a few decimals since I visited with you last. It's a one guest town on this episode of Spicer Speaking. Got a really good one for you. Motez Bishara. He is a London-based writer and author. Also spent some time here in SoCal, as I understand it. You may have seen his work in the likes of The Guardian, CNN, ESPN, Sky Sports. Author of three books, including a super interesting one that he put out a handful of years ago, Beating the NBA, Tales from a Frugal Fan. Super cool book. I'm trying to finagle his way into finding deals on NBA tickets. More recently, he's got two books out in 2022 alone. He's got some really diverse writing. When the Sheik Met the King is a book regarding Michael Jackson and his time in Bahrain. And Athletes Who Rock. He's profiled. Motez has 15 different athletes from the likes of Damian Lillard, Bernie Williams, Yannick Noah, Pat Nevin, who have had crossover success from the fields of sport to the musical realm. Gonna enjoy chatting with Motez about all of his works and a few sundries in there to boot. Before we get to the sponsors that make the show possible, one really cool local note just coming off of the longest day in golf. Used to call it sectional qualifying to get into the U.S. Open, the second stage. Now they call it final qualifying with two stages. I think it was kind of already inferred that it is final. Nonetheless, up yonder coast in San Francisco at the Olympic Club, Palm Desert's own Charlie Ryder, now 22 years old. I think he's a redshirt junior at the University of San Diego golf team. He qualified, got a solo second, compliments of a real heater that young Charlie was able to author in the first of his two rounds. Of course, he played 36 holes in sectional or final qualifying, and then rode that real steady Eddie stuff the rest of the way to a 7-under cumulative total in a field that included a lot of present and former PGA Tour players, a lot of top amateurs in the country and the world. Charlie Ryder, again, second place. He will be going on to play in the 122nd U.S. Open on the opposite side of the country at historic the Country Club in Brookline, Massachusetts next week. Super enthused to that. Tip of the cap to Charlie. Again, this program has three excellent sponsors. The program would not be possible without the likes of Perform Better at performbetter.com. All your gym, fitness, workout, seminar needs. Still a little TikTok to the summer season, technically, even though it's going to be about 107 degrees here today. You want that summer bod? You want that beach bod? You get all your workout gear at performbetter.com. Desert Willow Golf Resort, home to the Mountain View and Firecliff courses, respectively. Also, the on-site Palm Desert Golf Academy. Get your tee times at desertwillow.com. When you go on there, you're going to find that splash page about the summer VIP card. That might sound familiar from what I told you last summer. For those who are non-residents, by the way, of Palm Desert, California, very nominal cost for that summer VIP card. It's under $100. Goes from the onset of June through almost the entirety of September. You get discounted green fees. You can secure your tee times up to 7 days in advance, and then you get additional discounts and everything from apparel, accessories, instruction, and dining. And yeah, it's getting hot out here, folks, but I'm still playing. Uncle Juddy is still teeing it up. Heck, I got a tee time later this week at 6 a.m. First tee time. Pace car. Oh, by the time we're done, it will still be in the 80s, I'm sure. 3 hour golf. That's how we do it in the Coachella Valley come summertime. Internationally renowned golf photography from the super sibling tandem of John and Janine Hennebry. You can find their vast portfolio of work or reach out to them via their website at the Hennebrys, HENNEBRYS.com. Speaking of the Hennebrys, I'm going to present to you this week's opening image, a little essay action for you before we get to the chat with Motez Bishara. Again, opening image is brought to you by Hennebry Photography at thehennebrys.com. I'm going to highly suggest that you also check out their social media sites. That's The Hennebrys on either Facebook or Instagram. Don't really use the latter myself, but no worries. I'm sure you know how to use it. Talking about pictures. Well, the Hennebrys are experts on that. Some of the pictures that I've seen Johnny Hennebry post, some terrific stuff that he is doing overseas this summer, parts beyond, ranging from France to Scotland, also spending some time in Ireland. Can't wait to see the results of his drone work overseas this summer. But as mentioned, Dukes, we're just about a week away from the 122nd playing of the U.S. Open. My personal favorite golf event of the year, by the way. It's a tournament this year that we'll doubly enjoy for the venue. As noted, the Open takes place at the Country Club in Brookline, Mass. You're not familiar with the club's unique history? Well, just read Mark Frost's The Greatest Game Ever Played, and after that, if you can suffer Shia LaBeouf's faux golf swing, then check out the movie too. Of course, the global golf discussion as we ready for the Open. It isn't all that much about the Open at all, at least not yet. Rather, it's about a host of golfers who may or may not even be playing in the championship. And yes, I'm referring to the Saudi-backed LIV Golf Endeavor, which breaks its maiden this week at the Centurion Club in London. As even casual golf fans likely know by now, the debut field of 48 players will include 13 PGA Tour members. Two-time major champion, 24-time tour winner Dustin Johnson, and now the infamous Phil Mickelson at the forefront among them. Having formally announced his resignation from the PGA Tour at LIV's Tuesday morning presser in London, pardon me, DJ, he's the 13th-ranked player in the world, and now with Mickelson alongside, they'll be joined at the inaugural LIV event, and likely beyond, by the familiar turf names of Louis Oosthuizen, Sergio Garcia, Lee Westwood, Kevin Na, Ian Poulter, Charles Schwartzel, Graham McDowell, Martin Kaymer, Taylor Gooch, and two-time winner of our Desert Amex event, Hudson Swafford, is also among them. Or as I like to call him, a list of players we don't like anymore. I'll kind of digress on the disgust, save to offer you a reading suggestion of Saudi Arabia's human rights record and ranking on freedomhouse.org, which details for every nation in the world a succinct, learned, and plain languaged account of respective citizenry's freedoms across the globe and scores as such via political rights and civil liberties. Saudi Arabia, well, they score a whopping 7. Only 9 nations across the world score worse. For just a little taste, here's the Freedom House overview paragraph on Saudi Arabia. Quote, Saudi Arabia's absolute monarchy restricts almost all political rights and civil liberties. No officials at the national level are elected. The regime relies on pervasive surveillance, the criminalization of dissent, appeals to sectarianism and ethnicity, and public spending supported by oil revenues to maintain power. Women and religious minorities face extensive discrimination in law and in practice. Working conditions for the large expatriate labor force are often exploitative. End quote. And while there's much more therein, this introductory kind of gloss over graph, of course, doesn't delve into what life is like there for journalists or gays. Oh, and from our domestic perspective, lest we forget that 15 of the 19 terrorists from 9/11, the defining moment in our generation's lifetime prior to COVID. Yeah, 15 of them were from Saudi Arabia. And that litigation continues to play out via the families of 9/11 victims against the Saudis, tirelessly seeking to confirm the nation's part in our national tragedy. now over 20 years ago. Now, with the technique known as sport washing, Saudi Arabia is using its seemingly endless flow of oil cash in an attempt to rewrite its narrative. The golfers, however, seem to have little care about from whence these dollars flow. They simply seem content to count the greenbacks without care or consideration of the bruises on their souls or the askew direction of any moral compass. TikTok, 38 years old and sans a tour win since donning the green jacket from the reworked autumn pandemic playing of the Masters back in November of 2020, Dustin Johnson is undoubtedly the headliner, and akin to playing competitors, or per a part, rather, of Liv's format, his playing teammates, DJ is at a point in his career where he's shouldering away from his prime, which why we should pay attention to the reasoning for him and several others I've noted of potentially never again playing on the PGA Tour. Despite the exorbitant sums of career on and off course cash made by DJ, Mickelson, and their veteran playing peers, LIV Golf is providing them a lot of carrots, among them signing bonus bread to join their tour. Dustin Johnson is in the reported nine figures, and they get this money before ever putting a peg into the ground. They get a guaranteed payday with no cuts in their debut eight-event season, meaning last place will still take in six figures. They get 54-hole tournaments, meaning the commitment is shorter and less taxing. Shotgun starts, meaning there's less downtime in their lives and seemingly more time for other commitments and responsibilities. As intimated, a concurrent team format for events, meaning the players can still make even more money, even if they play like crap, while their teammates play well. All counted, these guys will make more money for less work and less time, and it's a combo which, at its core, would appear attractive to most of us. 51-year-old Phil Mickelson received a reported $200 million for his soul selling and help. Dustin Johnson will make 10 times as much for casually playing LIV Golf as he would busting his tail to win the FedEx Cup. And that reported signing amount of $125 million is more than Tiger Woods has made in his entire on-course career to date. But what's perhaps of greater concern than plucking these veteran players is that the initial LIV field is also sporting players, which in part represent the future of golf. Among these dudes, Ratchanan Chitanuat, I knew I was going to butcher that, but he's the world's eighth-ranked amateur. Andy Ogletree, winner of the US Am just 3 years ago. Turk Pettit, winner of last year's NCAA men's individual title. And James Piatt, the reigning US amateur champion. Well, pro golf has no shortage of fine young players outside of these guys, and while it remains an unknown to what degree these non-tour member players will face eventual sanction or suspension from any tour, stripping golf of future personnel with the promise of easy money should be of more heightened worry than plucking its past. Of course, we've seen competing in rival leagues before across basically all sports. And at least domestically, methinks a track record of not working out should have some bearing on what we'll eventually see with LIV. Pretty good move, wasn't it, for the AFL to merge with the NFL back in 1970? That worked out for them. And how did things pan out for the ABA and hoops? How about the World Hockey Association? Remember that try? And what about the XFL or the USFL? Across the board, dudes, usually none too good. The past has spoken and confirmed that David always loses this fight, no matter the size of a rock or a checkbook. Just ask idiot Donald Trump about going head-to-head with the NFL. And though the Saudis have already poured hundreds of millions of dollars into signing bonuses and purses and aligning with the Asian tour, which is smart, it's money that will find no cease, really. But they're soon to enter the battle for interest and support and traction and eyeballs. And this for a league which still has no TV deal. The money won't run out, friends, but the interest will. And the participating players will be forever stained. Wealthy, but tainted. To borrow from Highlander, there can be only one. All right, friends. As referenced, it's a one-guest town on episode 56 of the Spicer Speaking Podcast. Quite fortunate that we got a great guest at that coming to us from London. Although he is I think we can call him a part-time SoCal resident. He spent some time, ample time, he can correct me if that's wrong, in Venice, just 100 miles away here from the desert proper. You've seen his work in the likes of The Guardian, CNN, ESPN, Sky Sports, author of 3 books, as I mentioned at the onset of the show, 2 of which have come out just in recent months. Welcome Motez Bishara to the Spicer Speaking Podcast. Motez, good morning from across the pond.
Good morning, good afternoon here. Thank you for the kind intro.
Absolutely, man. Look forward to talking about your work and the diversity of your work. But let's start with this. You are right now in your London home, kind of at the nexus of what's going on in the golf world. As listeners know, I opened up this show railing on LIV Golf and the inaugural event taking place in your backyard, basically at the Centurion Club in London this week. I know that golf may not necessarily be your sweet spot, but sport and society and culture is. Just start with this, Motez. Is there any kind of sports writing, newspaper, media buzz that you're picking up in London for the inaugural LIV Golf event this week?
It's funny, you know, because Britain right now is in such political turmoil and chaos, it's kind of been buried a little bit, even in the sports section. I have, you know, read about it. I've read the headlines that Dustin Johnson and Phil Mickelson are joining. But beyond that, there hasn't been like a lot of hoopla about it the same way it's been written about in the U.S. press. That's partially because you might have heard Boris Johnson almost suffered a defeat of a no confidence vote yesterday. Was a lot closer than people predicted. And so his job is under fire. And people are not sure about the future of the leadership of this country. So in terms of British press specifically, the LIV Golf story has kind of been buried a little bit. But once the tournament starts, I suspect that'll change a little bit.
Because of the political ramifications, human rights ramifications, the cultural ramifications of what's going on with the LIV Golf and how it's going to have a huge impact. We're going to learn a lot here this week and next week for the U.S. Open. I know golf isn't really your sweet spot. I mean, you've written a ton about the NBA, but might this pull you in to the golf sphere a little bit more following the story?
I've been fascinated by it personally. And I think just to go back to your first question, I think the reason why it hasn't been blown up as much here is because the British press and British media has had a slow burn of Saudis pouring money into sports that are more popular here. For instance, Formula One, you know, they've already had 2 races, 2 big Formula One races. They had the second to last race in the last circuit in last year's season with Lewis Hamilton, you know, almost, I think he did win that one under controversial circumstances. And they had the second race in this year's season. Also, they've spent a ton of money on boxing. Anthony Joshua, who's been a champion here in Britain for quite a while, fought there against Luis Ruiz for a big heavyweight title. I think the purse was something like $50 million or something crazy. They've been trying to get Tyson Fury out there for a fight too. So British, you know, British athletes have been going out there for a little while. And now golf is just sort of the next step. And I'm not quite sure if any British big name, I think Ian Poulter was offered a lot of money, but you know, he's not a huge name anymore. So that's perhaps why. But yeah, I've been absolutely fascinated by the story.
I'll step back a little bit, ask you broadly, a man of my own heart, Motez, I mean, going through your work, and we'll get to your books here in a moment, but you certainly seem to have found your own sweet spot, in really diversifying your writings in your career, incorporating not just one sport, not just one subject matter, but a crossover, which not everybody is either interested in doing or able to do well. but you've had the crossover into sport and culture. Why do you think that both subject matters interest you? And why do you think you've been successful in doing that with your writings?
Well, what, you know, when I write for the public, I try and add value. And the best way I can add value is to write from a humanistic point of view of things I see off the field, of what athletes do off the field, whether it's social protest or whether it's a unique way of training or their lifestyle. It could be really anything to do with the human side of sports. And I think that's where I come in, and I try to tell their stories from a way in which it touches people and broadens their scope of knowledge of what goes into making an athlete. I mean, I could list, you know, all kinds of different stories that I've done. Just off the top of my head, I wrote one about the struggles of professional tennis players who are beyond the top 10, of how they have to book all their flights on their own and their hotels and travel and pay for their, you know, hitting partner and their coach and their masseuse and stuff. And, you know, it's sort of a one man traveling circus or one woman traveling circus. And that can be a very interesting thing that the ordinary fan doesn't really know about. On another level, I've written up a story on the Kansas City Chiefs offensive lineman, who's also a medical doctor, the Canadian player Laurent Dufanet-Tardif. Yes. You know, so these kind of unique stories in sports have always fascinated me, especially when it comes to social protest in sport. You know, and I've always found that fascinating. And now we're at another level of consciousness of the crossover between politics and political stances in sports. And I think athletes, especially on the international level, have now found their voice more than they have before and understand the power of speaking up about matters that are important to them and using the sports as a platform.
Again, a writer with whom share a heart and a pen in some respects. Those aims and endeavors, Motez, when I look at my own portfolio over the course of just a calendar year, you know, there's a number of articles which I write for money, which, you know, these are work or copywriting jobs I might take on occasion. But maybe once a month or once every 6 weeks, there's an opportunity and a unique one to really say something, to do a special article. So again, when I look back on a year's worth of work, there might be a handful that are kind of put in a special place. For some of your work in the vein that we've just discussed, is there an article or maybe two that you can look back on in the recent past and feel like you made a difference with something?
Yeah, there are. And, you know, I teach journalism, too. And this is the kind of thing I like to try and impart to my students, is that their writing can make a difference. You know, as you know, as a writer, sometimes we struggle with getting paid. And you know, you do, you work a lot. And, you know, you got to squeeze out the pay and the dollars, especially as the freelancer. But, you know, the payback is sometimes your work does make a big difference. And I've seen it in the past. I wrote about, for instance, the Gable, the National Gay Flag Football League. Every year they have a tournament that rotates in different cities around America. And now it's just this huge thing that attracts the best flag football teams of all different genders, sexual orientations, races, cultures. It's a very diverse thing that takes up a weekend in different cities, and NFL teams sponsor and stuff. And I know that community, although I'm not part of it, I know that community was very appreciative of someone coming in and writing for a major outlet like CNN and talking about the human side of why that league is so important to them. And so the outpouring of appreciation I got for that was very gratifying. I'll give you another example on a different end of the spectrum. Yeah. Is my native, my country of birth is Kuwait in the Middle East. And, you know, I went back for a holiday once, and I noticed that we had this stadium that had been built for a few hundred million dollars that was sort of languishing in the desert and not being used. And I used the platform of writing for CNN and investigating why that wasn't used. And the magnifying glass of having the world's a big world media outlet's attention on that, really showed the spotlight on the government of, you know, how it was neglectful of that. And lo and behold, only about 6 months later, they fixed it. And it had been languishing for about 2 or 3 years. So, you know, now it's a fully functional operating stadium. It's the National Stadium of Kuwait. And I feel like I probably had a small part to play in you know, why it's up and running again.
As a follow-up to that, and again, this is something I think about personally, and this is why I love having a lot of writers on this program. Not only can I cherry pick your ideas, but we can also find a sense of empathy that I hope and trust is interesting to the listeners, writers, and otherwise. But in the recent past, is there an interview or a particular story subject whom you interviewed that their story or their answers really stuck to your guts?
Ooh, well, okay, this is a good segue now into my book, I think. Let's talk about Athletes Who Rock. This is my latest release. And Athletes Who Rock is a collection of 15 interviews, which, as the name suggests, are very top-level athletes, champions in many respects, who are also very adept and skilled musicians. And some of them have gone on to, you know, write hit songs for themselves and others and play to stadiums. And so having 15 very in-depth interviews with these different magnificent sports personalities, yes, each one of them shined a light and gave me many answers that were surprising to me and that were, you know, I felt very empathetic with them in terms of the struggles they faced in their lives and how they overcame them and eventually became champions and very successful artists in music as well. I can give you a couple of quick examples.
Please do.
Damian Lillard of the Portland Trailblazers, you know, U.S. Olympian and future Hall of Famer, one of the top 75 NBA players of all time. You know, the stuff that Dame had to go through to become who he is was really surprising to me. He was not heavily recruited out of college. He went to Weber State, a school, a homogeneously white school, pretty much in the middle of Utah, that had not produced an NBA prospect in 25 years before he got there. He didn't play a minute of his sophomore season in high school before he got to Weber State. And yet his belief never wavered that he would be an NBA prospect. He broke his leg his junior year after he finally got the attention of NBA scouts. And rather than sulk, he sat on a chair with a cast on and shot, I think it was 300 baskets a day, and developed a high arch style that served him well in the NBA. And of course, he's drafted number 6, I think in the 2013 draft, and was rookie of the year over Anthony Davis, the much heralded Anthony Davis. So, you know, stories like that. Dame is also a really talented rapper. He has 4 albums out. His music has been in movies, in TV series like Ballers. And he's, you know, he's a guy that doesn't lack confidence. If anyone who's ever watched him play knows that. But it's also the hard work and tremendous amount of dedication that goes into his craft that really touched me. And there are so many other stories. You know, Bernie Williams of the New York Yankees is in my book, too. Bernie went to School of the Performing Arts in Puerto Rico, where there was no sports, actually. He focused on guitar and music, and he played baseball after school, and then, you know, would go home, get home on the bus at about 8 at night, do his schoolwork. He was a 4.0 student, and actually, believe it or not, qualified for medical school in Puerto Rico. His mom was a high school principal, and when he got recruited by the Yankees and signed on with them and moved to the U.S., to continental U.S., to be a minor league player, she enrolled him in medical school in Puerto Rico without his knowledge, and he would go back in the off seasons, and he finished 3 semesters of work before he finally told the dean of the medical school that he just couldn't do both things at the same time at a high level. And the dean said, look, if this baseball thing doesn't work out for you, the door's open to come back, you know. So incredible story. Bernie, when he finished his career, his career with the Yankees, which of course he won four World Series and his number has been retired by the, you know, most legendary team in baseball, in my opinion. He went back to school and formally trained as a musician. Again, he went to the Manhattan School of Music, got his degree in musicianship, and now is a full-time jazz guitarist and has been nominated for Latin Grammy. So these stories really touch me, and the things that these people have all faced in their lives never ceases to amaze me.
Friends, you're tuning into episode 56 of the Spicer Speaking Podcast. Writer and author Motez Bishara, London-based, part-time SoCal resident. He is my guest. You can find him on Twitter at Motez, M-O-T-E-Z, and the letter B, or you just type his name, Motez Bishara, into the Google machine or Amazon, and you can find all three of his books, including his most recent work, which we're discussing right now, Athletes Who Rock. Let me ask you, Motez, a couple questions about that. I'm a Minnesota Timberwolves fan, I guess you can say, as a Minnesota native. Troy Hudson was a guy for the Minnesota Timberwolves that he also crossed over into the music world. I think he had a hip-hop career, maybe a couple albums. And I believe a listener can correct me, but there seemed to be some underlying opinion that his focus on his music was diverting attention and time from working on his game. And Troy Hudson had a great run for a very short window, and then he kind of disappeared. I just started reading the book, which I'm readily enjoying, but is that any kind of thrust, or is there any kind of mention in the book about that, that sometimes trying to do two things well can make you worse at one of them?
You know, it's a criticism that has come up for a number of these athletes. One that comes to mind is the tennis pro Daniela Hachikova, who's number five in the world. Daniela, after she started making a name for herself in tennis, got a lot of offers to model. She's also a gifted pianist, but, you know, she appeared in Sports Illustrated and in ESPN, The Body Issue, and got some flack from critics who said that the modeling was taking away from her focus on tennis. It's the same kind of criticism that the young starlet Emma Raducanu is now getting. She won the U.S. Open, sure, most recent winner. And this kind of criticism is not unusual for athletes. But to be honest, I think that idea is kind of waning. You know, you have so many athletes now who are not just diversifying into places like music, into fields like music, but also into business. You know, you saw Kevin Durant has a movie production company. I think LeBron James does too.
Oh yeah,
they're big. You know, both of them are big tech entrepreneurs. I know Dwayne Wade had a fashion line and a wine line as well. So I think among the top guys, especially and women, these criticisms are starting to wane a bit, and it's becoming much more acceptable for people like Serena Williams to have their own fashion line and, you know, have interests outside of their sport. And frankly, I think that's a very healthy thing, you know, rather than sort of sitting around and playing video games, you know, during your downtime in the NBA when you're on the road or at home. Or frankly, you know, getting in trouble at the casinos or in other places. So I think being in a recording studio for 6 or 8 hours at a time when you're not having a practice is probably a great thing. It's a productive thing to put your energy, time, and resources into.
Yeah, I'd be the last to want to pigeonhole really anybody to saying, oh, you can only do one thing well. But I do understand in part the criticisms. And there's also kind of this weird totem that as I see it, Motez, where the athletes want to be rock stars, the rock stars want to be actors, then the actors want to be politicians. It's like climbing this totem to like, oh, but I also want to do something else. I don't know if that's a theme at all that is touched upon in your book.
It's a great point. In a way, it is a theme that is touched upon because a lot of these, amazing inspiring characters that I've interviewed are not just good in sports and music. They're good at pretty much anything they set their minds to. So, for instance, former Miami Heat standout Ronnie Cicely, whose number has been retired at Syracuse and was, you know, an excellent basketball player. He's not just a gifted DJ who travels around the world playing his house music, but he's also a big real estate developer in Miami. You know, he builds homes, and he's a big character in Miami in the real estate scene. So he's a very well-known guy. And a lot of them are good at other crafts, whether it's the pioneering street skateboarder Ray Barbie, being an excellent world-class photographer, or, you know, there's all, everybody's got a story. Kevin Walker, a gifted Swedish soccer player, captain of their championship team, also won the Swedish Idol, like the American Idol competition. Okay. You know, so I have found that, you know, these guys seem to be very successful in everything they touch on because they have the dedication and ability to keep chipping away at skill sets that require a lot of work and a lot of hours. And, you know, as one of my interviewees said to me, you can't be the type of person that gets bored quickly. You know, as anyone, you're into golf, as anyone who has had tried to swing a golf club knows, it takes a lot of work, many, many hours to perfect that swing or even get close to it. And the pros, you know, still tweak their swings after many years. So, you know, you have to be dedicated.
You mentioned the phrase and the word skill set and dedicated. I think evidencing your own skills and diversity and dedication as a writer, not just that book that has come out this year, but a totally different subject matter, When the Sheik Met the King. This is a book about Michael Jackson, and I believe some curious time he spent in Bahrain. Correct me if I'm wrong on that.
Absolutely.
Country. Okay. Yes. Well, what was the impetus for writing this book, Motez?
Sure. Well, it's it's funny. As I mentioned, my country of birth is Kuwait. Bahrain is a country that is not located too far from Kuwait. It's about the same distance as Boston and New York. So we share a lot of things culturally. I have a lot of friends in Bahrain, and it's a country I've been visiting since I was a kid. And it always struck me as curious as to how and why somebody as famous, really at the time, probably the most famous person in the world, Michael Jackson, decided to live in such an unsuspecting country. What took him there? What was he doing there? What were his interactions with the locals? It's such a different culture and scene from the one that he grew up in Indiana and California. So I have contacts. I'm a journalist, and I did some investigative journalism during COVID. Actually, it was during the downtime of COVID, and Athletes Who Rock was in its editorial stage, and it was sort of more choppy in terms of the workflow for that. So I was able to dedicate some time to looking at something else, and I figured it's now or never. You know, there's a lot of people at home who are sort of not traveling and idling, and I can perhaps get them to speak to me about a topic that happened about 15 years prior, which I wanted to jump in before they started losing their recollections and details of their interactions with the King of Pop. And so I managed to speak to some incredible sources, including Jackson's former manager in Bahrain, Guy Holmes, and got some really remarkable stories about what he was doing there. It turned out he was working on a comeback album with the Sheik, who himself was an aspiring songwriter. And so if you could picture it, the two of them would sit hunkered in the Sheik's studio and collaborate on writing songs. And they actually were working on an album. And they even have some songs that are in the vaults in Bahrain that have not come out for various reasons, which I detail in the book. So, yeah, please check it out. It's on Kindle, When the Sheik Met the King.
I've got one more for you today, Motez, kind of going in inverse chronological order. It's been about 8 or 9 years since you put out a super fascinating subject matter. Beating the NBA is the title of the book. The subject matter revolve around basically the frugality of trying to find deals at, I think it was every or nearly every NBA arena. Just kind of a quick hitter question. We're, of course, in the NBA Finals, game three is coming up, and what is a compelling series. Tickets now, man. Of course, got two big markets. The cheapest ones you can get, about $800 or $900. Courtside seats can run you upwards of $25,000.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know if in your search and your attempts and your frugality, if you think you're able to ever swing one of those 25K tickets for a seat.
Not during the finals, I can tell you that. I did sit courtside at a Washington Wizards game, and it was a from memory, it was a $900 ticket that I bagged for about $100, and it came with free food and beer, which I was pretty happy about. But it was, you know, it was the Wizards. They weren't a very good team at the time, though they did have John Wall. And it was like a Sunday afternoon, and, you know, nobody was interested in going. So I, you know, I got those at, you know, sort of around 10% of the value. when you want to go to the finals, unfortunately, you're going to have to pay at the very least face value, if not three or four times as much. But, you know, they do have these ticket aggregator sites now, like SeatGeek, which really help the frugal fans like myself try and determine what a quote unquote good deal or great deal is. And they aggregate all the secondary ticket markets. And you can come away with probably paying, you know, $1,000, probably for a pretty decent seat, I guess. But, you know, it all depends on how badly you want to go, really.
Motez, so appreciative of your time, man. Again, friends, I want to encourage you to check out all three of Motez's books. And we talked extensively today about Athletes Who Rock. You can find that via Amazon under Motez, M-O-T-E-Z, Bishara. You can also follow Motez at Twitter. That's at M-O-T-E-Z and the letter B. Certainly adding, well, as I said, I started reading that book, so I look forward to finishing it in my summer reading list. Motez, fascinating to visit with you, hear about your really interesting career, man. Thank you so much for joining the Spicer Speaking Podcast.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much. It was really fun. And, you know, I'd love to come back and talk some more about golf and other topics.
All right. We always welcome you back to Southern California. Thanks, man.
Thank you. Take care.
All right, folks. It's going to wrap it up for this week in episode 56 of the Spicer Speaking Podcast. Really appreciate the time of writer and author Motez Bishara. Be sure to check out his work. Just type Motez Bishara, M-O-T-E-Z. Type that into the Google search or into Amazon for his trio of books, including the two that we just discussed and that he has put out in this calendar year alone. Program would not be possible without a trio of super sponsors. That list starts weekly with Perform Better at performbetter.com. Need a couple things to outfit your home gym, or you need to outfit an entire workout facility. You can get that done by visiting performbetter.com. Desert Willow Golf Resort. Get your tee times for the Mountain View and Firecliff courses, respectively, at desertwillow.com. And when you're on there, be sure to check out the on-site Palm Desert Golf Academy. And also look into that summer VIP card. Some great deals to be had, to be sure. Internationally renowned golf photography from John and Janine Hennebry. You can find them online at thehennebrys, H-E-N-E-B-R-Y-S.com. Also take a look at their social media sites, also under the Hennebrys while you are there. Hey, you're a golf course owner, operator, head super, club manager. You got some musty photography. Haven't updated that for your course, your club, your membership for a good long time. You're going to want to hire the Hennebrys to get that fresh photography. They've been doing it at an expert level for many, many decades. Friends, appreciate your time, your interest, your ears. Thank you for tuning in to the Spicer Speaking Podcast. You be safe out there. And be well.